This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Gary YouTube, joined by yet another Gary YouTube, and we're back to do some more Gary YouTubing, this time in the form of a tier list where we are going to put the superstars saved from retirement by AEW into a tier list based on how successful their respective runs have been in the company. And when I talk about the runs, I'm not talking about the ones out the bottom, eh, Andrew? That's some quality Gary YouTubing, isn't it? Joel, hit the intro, please. Just in case you haven't been here before, Andrew over here is going to put these wrestlers into a tier list ranging from the best to lovely, 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 middle of the road, all right, just about bearable, and you want to avoid that big green bin, don't you?
We sure do, although big green bin, that would... Oh, no, that's not recycling. Yeah, big green bin is just
glass
general
bottles,
waste.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, get rid. That's what it is. You don't want to go in there.
One man who is not general waste, this is the first person we're going to talk about today, is Eddie Kingston, who in the research for this tier list, I learned through an interview he did with the New York Post about his AEW debut. He said, "Well, partner..." He didn't actually say that bit, but this is what he said. "I think probably another month of not wrestling for companies, I would have sold the house and moved back to New York and back to my parents' place." He claiming he would have had to have got a regular job because, of course, his debut for AEW occurred during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Wrestling shows weren't happening that he was a part of, obviously, on the indie scene. He got the big chance in AEW after calling out Cody Rhodes. Yep. If that happened maybe a month or two later, it might never have happened because he might have given up on the dream.
That would have been insane.
It would have been insane. So AEW practically did save Eddie Kingston from the old retirement home, which is a weird way to put that. He's not going to a retirement home, just not wrestling anymore. Anyway, as I said, they called out Cody Rhodes during an indie show, leading to AEW having him answer the open challenge on Dynamite in a no DQ TNT title match against Cody Rhodes himself. Off the back of that match and the promo where he just cut Cody off, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was a fantastic promo. There was a movement on social media, sign hire Eddie Kingston, basically. Mm-hmm. I forget what the actual hashtag was. All the way back then, over 3 and a bit years ago.
When I was going back and looking at some of these runs, I couldn't believe that 3 years doesn't sound that long ago, but it feels like a lifetime ago. In terms of like looking back on the careers, and like some of these people that we're gonna get into today have had such an incredible trajectory from where they started off 3 years ago to where they are now. Eddie Kingston being, I think, one of, if not the best.
Yeah, the positives have way outweighed the negatives. Obviously, yeah. The negatives, you obviously think of the exploding barbed wire death match. No fault of Eddie's at all. He obviously brought it round saying he fainted because of the sheer terror of what was supposed to happen in an exploding barbed wire death match. What happened actually is a little bit different, obviously. If you think about the stuff with and against Mox, as I've just mentioned, there's stuff with the best friend Penta and other assorted friends of different statures, like Rey Fénix and people like that.
Yeah, Eddie Kingston is one of those ones as well, like you want to see him always succeed in what he does because he puts everything into literally everything he's given. And a lot of the times we've seen him on the back foot, but recently we've seen him sort of step forward a little bit more and come into this role where he's not one who's been shy about sharing what his dreams are and what he wants to do in wrestling and everything. And we're finally getting to a place now where these things are playing out more for him. We've got the New Japan Strong Champion at the moment and the Ring of Honor World Champion too. And he's finally having like all these sort of dream matches he's been wanting to have for the longest time. There's nobody more in wrestling that I want to see succeed more than Eddie Kingston.
And I think that's what keeps him out the best, as we're sat here in October 2023, whenever you're watching this video in the future. Hopefully, if you're watching it in a year, 2 years' time, Eddie Kingston has won the AEW World title, because I think that's what his standing amongst the fan base, his work on camera, not just in the ring, where I think he exceeds a lot of expectations, but he does bell to bell with his chops and taking his nips out and go on, hit me harder, daddy. He loves that sort of stuff, doesn't he? But also his promos, there's no one like him in wrestling. But I just think Tony's not fully convinced,
Is that why he's giving him the Ring of Honor World Championship?
That's my big fear, Andrew.
But maybe this is just like, I don't want to say a test run, but maybe that is kind of like the thing for Tony to look at and go, okay, he could be the one to carry my company forward as a champion. I think he's got more than enough to prove that he can do that as well.
Because Eddie against a big dirty heel.
It is.
Oh,
Tony,
it's
got to
happen. Make Tony Khan the world champion. Eddie Kingston face it. But I'm going to suggest, just as a start, obviously as the tier goes on, we can move stuff from different tiers. I'm going to suggest a top end, lovely, lovely, lovely run for Eddie Kingston so far.
Okay, with hopes in mind that in the future he does finally get to that.
Yeah.
That big old AEW title run that we're all looking forward to him having, hopefully.
Do you reckon you agree with that one?
I was going to say the best. Oh, no,
but I'll go the best.
That might be my personal preference, though, coming into it, which, I mean, is a lot of what this is anyway. But sort of seeing it from where you're seeing it, and I do feel like that final step is going to be that AEW world title run.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. So where do you want to put him?
I'll go top, obviously top of the... Well, there's nobody else there, is there, at the moment? We'll put him in for now.
Moving on to Daddy Arse. Now, I didn't realise this happened on the 13th of November 2015, but a WWE officially announced that Kip Sopp, as his real name is, was released from the company after failing a test for performance-enhancing drugs.
Oh.
He had tested positive for elevated levels of testosterone at a powerlifting event on July the 25th of that year. Then from there, he had sporadic appearances around the indies over the coming years and for New Japan Pro Wrestling, and a one-shot deal on Raw 25 where he was part of DX and their stuff with FTR, or whatever they were called back then. The Revival, that's the one, isn't it? And he signed with AEW as a coach. Basically, you know, it's not a full retirement, but he wasn't doing much in the world of professional wrestling.
No.
He became an AEW coach when the company was announced at the start of 2019. From there, as well as doing his coach work behind the scenes, he made a few appearances in the ring before the Gun Club was formed with his sons. Mm-hmm. Their run, I thought, was especially handled so well at the very end of it, with the way they were turned heel against their father. It was fantastic stuff. There are a pair of right dicks now who are flourishing. No dicks have ever flourished before.
I'm so happy for them now. Because it before, it wasn't really hitting with me, especially when Billy was there as well with his sons, and they were kind of like the baby face sort of thing. It didn't really hit for me until we got the heel turn for them, and then the stuff with the Acclaimed, and then obviously now them. The Bang Bang Gang.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Love the Bang Bang Gang. But Daddy Ass himself, he aligned with the Acclaimed in August of 2022. Can you believe it was that long? And I guess their culminating moment was at All In inside Wembley Stadium in front of some people. A few people, many people, allegedly some people, where of course they won the AEW Trios titles from the House of Black. It's a run that has far exceeded expectations, I would suggest.
I think it's gone from not much of a strength to a strength. Yeah, like when he came into the ring in AEW, he looked phenomenal, right? That's the one thing that everybody, I feel like, was always saying, was he looks in phenomenal shape, he's in incredible shape, and he can still really go in the ring. But like the stuff that he was doing with his sons at that point, where they're all a collective, I was like, you don't really do anything for me at all. But then when we get away and we get sort of more the character stuff with the Acclaimed and where we are now, I think it's just leaps and bounds better than where we started off, at least, anyway.
It's easy for that kind of gimmick to get a bit stale after a while. You're thinking, oh, they're just coming out here to peddle the catchphrase. I can only remember one segment on a Rampage, I think, where that was the case, where they literally just came out promo just to go, yeah, we can scissor and all that sort of stuff. But apart from that, it's organically grown.
Yeah.
The popularity with the fan base hasn't really waned. I think it's been handled very well. If I was going to put it in the tier, I don't know what you would think about this, young Andy. I would say it's on the same tier as Eddie, but nowhere near as high up.
By the time we sort of like add everything up, I think you're right. Lovely, 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 because Sort of like Eddie, maybe not in a similar sense, but in terms of like where they both are at the moment on the card and everything like that. But in terms of like just all of a sudden doing something that just propels them like straight into everybody's consciousness. I think, yeah. So the sort of on the similar level, but a bit further down on the lovely.
Go on. Next up, we have Mr. Katsuyori Shibata, who wrestled one match in 2021 after obviously his horrendous head injury in the middle, sort of the middle to end part. When was it, 2017?
It was 2017, yeah. And he collapsed, didn't he, after his match with Okada, I think it might have been. I don't even remember.
But he wrestled one match in 2021 as part of the G1 Climax against Zack Sabre Jr. in a time-limit draw, another in 2022 against Ren Narita, but then he made his AEW debut in November of 2022 in an Atlantic title match against Orange Cassidy on Rampage. Since then, he's had 13 matches across AEW and Ring of Honor, 8 of those being as part of Ring of Honor, as Tony Khan appears to be a lot more willing to use him in the ring for one reason or another compared to what New Japan Pro Wrestling use him, so that's why I put him in this tier list, because it feels like Tony's just more willing to use him than New Japan are. Yep. Obviously, the highlights have got to be the match against Eddie Kingston at WrestleDream. Mm. There was some tag team stuff against the BCC at All Out. The international title four-way against Orange Cassidy, Daniel Garcia, and Zack Sabre Jr. I think that match against Orange Cassidy was when Mike Tyson was on commentary. So Orange Cassidy versus Shibata with Mike Tyson on commentary, which was a weird dream, but it's maybe a wet one.
A wet dream. Hey, like, Shibata is somebody who has obviously had to change his style quite dramatically from where it used to be when he was in New Japan, but it still works really well for him. I think he's a great sort of like ground and pound wrestler who can still get that stuff over as well. Obviously, you know, I think a lot of people really sort of admire him for being able to come back after something like that and for his work in New Japan, but like the fact that he's changed his style up so much and he can still get it over with an American audience as well, I think is a testament to the man. I think he's
another,
great.
Another run that's exceeded expectations, especially if you subscribe to the theory that Brian Alvarez does, that he had his brain removed and put back in.
I was like, what?
Do you remember that story? I'm sure it was Brian Alvarez.
I think I've heard about this before.
Joel, if I'm speaking out with Turnia, please put something on the screen to say I'm wrong, but I'm sure that Brian Alvarez or Dave Meltzer or somebody said he went under surgery to have his brain removed and cleaned or something and put back in.
What? It was something to do with like, I can't remember what it was, but it was like a bleed on the brain or it was something like that. I can't imagine him having his brain taken. Like Homer Simpson, where they cut the dome open and just like
give it a little rub and then put it back in. But yeah, Joel might have put something on the screen there. I don't know what's going on, but I would. Why do you want to put it, Andrew? I'll let you.
I feel like we're going in a similar theme here. I think it's lovely.
Ooh, I was going to say all right. I reckon it's a step down in terms of the tier, in terms of Eddie Kingston and Daddy Arse. But it's been good all the same, hasn't it?
It's such a difficult one as well.
You take the lead, though, Andrew. I'll take the lead with those two.
I'm trying to think about it, because obviously now he's the Ring of Honor Pure Champion, right? And he's still having really good and quite lengthy matches as well, considering what he's been through. I would put him in between Kingston and Daddy Ass.
Go on, then.
But,
a day?
Oh, I don't know.
A double day?
People will be like, oh, he's being just too nice, you know what I mean? But I think I'm looking forward to seeing more of what he can do, because I just think, yeah, he's exceeded expectations of coming back from something that should have just completely ended his career.
Having his brain taken out.
Yeah, his brain taken out and polished.
Moving on to Tully Blanchard, who hasn't been seen in AEW for absolutely ages. He wasn't involved in professional wrestling for close to 10 years before he joined AEW. He had a WWE Network appearance on Table for Three in 2016. He was involved in the NWA for a small period of time as well within that 10-year period. But then he made a surprise appearance during a sit-down interview with Jim Rouse and Sean Spears on AEW's Road to All Out back in 2019. Then it was announced the following day that Blanchard had signed a multi-show deal to serve as an exclusive advisor to Sean Spears. That started off really well, the Tully and Sean Spears relationship. Yep. I thought coming off the back of the chairman, and I said gimmick there, but the chairman real life accident with the not gimmick chair.
No,
or the gimmick
it was
chair.
Gimmicked.
That went,
yeah. It was definitely gimmick.
Oh, it didn't look gimmick. But then it went a bit weird as time went on because it became less serious. I remember there was a point in one of the pay-per-views where Sean Spears had his kecks pulled down and he had a little pair underneath with Tully's head on his arse.
And I believe maybe in storyline as well, Tully was like, you're a bit of a mockery right now, Paul. It's not really working out for me so much. I liked that sort of Tully was able to adapt to what was going on.
As a manager, he's an evil man.
He's so good.
He's a bastard.
He is a bastard, but he's such a good bastard. You know what I mean?
And
he's amazing.
He displayed how good of a bastard he was when he became FTR's manager and had his first match in 14 years on Dynamite in March 2021. I remember the assisted pile drivers he would help to give because he is a bastard. Then a year after that first match in 14 years, he was fired by FTR. Then he went to Ring of Honor to manage the Gates of Agony and Brian Cage for a little bit before Prince Nana said, yeah, I'll buy Tully Blanchard Enterprises off you. And that was the end of his run. It started off well, but then just sort of petered out to nout.
I think it was amazing. I think his stuff with FTR, incredibly good.
Yeah.
And all the heel work that he did within FTR there when they were in the midst of a rival with Proud and Powerful, and Conan came out, and then we had Tully come out as well and cut like a promo and then attack Conan as well during that segment. I thought he was like the best at just being such a dastardly heel. Yeah. But you're right, it did peter out towards the end, but that was not necessarily his fault, though.
No.
You know? But I think he played his role perfectly. And I feel like his promo work also helped FTR in their promo work too.
You could tell they were living out their dream, weren't they?
Oh, obviously, absolutely,
Tully's ties to a certain group back in the day.
Yes.
He was now playing the part of somebody else in that group back in the day. And FTR were playing the parts of Arn and Tully.
Tully, yes. So again, oh no, I'm going to ask you now, where would you put this
I'd
one?
Go all right.
You'd go all right.
It started off well, it petered out towards the end. He always felt like it could have been a bit more based off the way he started. I think all right is fair.
I think all right's fair. No, yeah, again, I'm sort of just basing it off. I'm just basing it off his FTR stuff. But if you sort of factor in everything, I think you're right. It did peter out towards the end. So I'll go with all right.
Way I.
Why?
Awesome Kong is a bit of a weird one. Not in terms of her herself, her running AEW. We hadn't really heard much of her in terms of professional wrestling, as in doing the wrestling. I mean, obviously the stuff with Glow speaks for itself and all that kind of stuff. Since about 2016 was her last sort of big, higher level professional wrestling run. She was then a surprise entrant in the Women's Triple Threat match at Double Nothing back in 2019, making it a fatal four. I remember the debut from with Brandy coming out
saying,
I want to make this awesome.
And everyone was like, what does that mean?
It's the Miz. No, it's not. It's Awesome Kong. She looked fantastic. Then during the Full Gear pre-show, after Britt Baker defeated Bea Priestley, do you remember that name?
Blair Davenport.
Kong and Rhodes made their way to the ring, assaulting Priestley and cutting off a lock of hair with a karambit. Is that how you pronounce it?
Karambit.
It's a curly knife.
Yes.
Then the Nightmare Collective being a thing, and it was a massive wet fart, and I'm glad AEW ended it before it got a bit too out of hand, because it just wasn't working. Then after not appearing for nearly a year and a half, her contract was not renewed in the summer of 2021. She had 5 matches in total across all of AEW shows, and then she went on to film some more Glow, and then ultimately retired from professional wrestling in terms of in-ring stuff when her contract wasn't renewed in 2021. So it was a fantastic start, because I was there in the arena for her debut. For Double or Nothing, we were over there. Weren't we? It was fantastic.
Nice.
So yeah, that was a fantastic start. She still looked the part. She still wrestled. She had that aura as well. Like when her music hit and people realised it was her, it was like a Bobby Lashley pop from the Cultaholic Wrestling Podcast.
It was.
Good God, it's her. She's going to kill folk. But ultimately, it's got to be a step below Tully, hasn't it? Just because she did little to nout.
And there was so much promise as well, I feel like, too. With what you said there, I enjoyed like when she was coming out and she'd like cut the hair off, and I was like, oh, I'm excited for this to like continue.
Because she was putting on a belt, like all of her victims.
Like,
and then
little trophies and things like that. And I thought, that's actually pretty cool.
Then Brandy introduced Luther.
Yep. And then things went downhill. I really think they didn't think much more further ahead than that initial debut that they did for her, and didn't really think too much further ahead than that. It is just about bearable, I think.
Aye. It's harsh, but it's fair.
It is, I agree.
Jake Roberts now, as far as I could see, Jake Roberts didn't appear in for a major wrestling promotion, if you want, one of the big three or four, since 2014, before he rocked up to AEW in a Road to All Out promo in 2019, where he's cutting his famous, you wanna play 21? I'll speak about the Women's Battle Royal that night. Then a debut Dynamite promo happened and the world imploded, where he completely schooled Cody Rhodes on Dynamite. As I said there, he turned his back. He's like, oh, you don't fear anybody when you turn your back on
and
them.
He turns his back and he chucks on Michael.
Yeah, he speaks about Caesar and all that stuff.
He does,
Mighty Caesar. It was a fantastic promo. Obviously, I can't do it justice. As you just saw there, later that month, he was then revealed as Lance Archer's new... Well, Lance Archer was revealed as his new client. Mm-hmm. And it just worked initially. Lance Archer was just throwing fools around. And Jake Roberts was literally, and I'm not speaking out of turn here, he was having orgasms on the outside the ring. He was, do you remember?
He was, yeah. No, he was enjoying it, and rightly so as well.
But it was unnerving, and I guess that was the point.
Yeah.
I remember it was all going well, then they had a really uncomfortable promo segment, or maybe it was just after a match with Brandi Rhodes, where Jake gets his snake out, and then Brandi was like lying on the ring, and he sort of like mounts her.
I remember.
That was a bit like, oh.
Oh dear.
Which I guess was the point.
What's the point, isn't it?
But you can get there somewhere else, shouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, having to watch that. then as Archer began to be used less, obviously, so did Jake get used less. And now we hardly ever see him on screen, which is a bit of a shame, but I guess there might be health implications. We've had stories like that come out. Yeah. Obviously, he can't be used as much as he once was. Apparently, this year, 2023, he's been involved in a community outreach program called AEW Together, which is nice. But in terms of the on-screen stuff, it's very much a story of Tully Blanchard there. It started off fantastic and just eventually petered out like a balloon.
Like a balloon. And I feel so bad for both him and for Lance Archer as well, who... again showed so much promise, and with someone like Jake the Snake on your side as well, that already gives you like so much like gravitas, doesn't it, too. I want to see Lance Archer back in the title pictures and stuff in AEW again.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see what they do with him, because they had that show in Texas last week and Lance Archer was used because he is a Texan native.
Yes.
Texan native. So whether they go and use him again, I don't know what's going on, because he has been moaning for the longest time, Lance Archer, just to be used.
Yeah.
But they haven't used him, so.
And rightly so. Like, he can do everything. He's a big man. And I know we say that a lot about, you know, a lot of big men within AEW, but like, he's a big man who can do everything, literally everything, and I feel like he gels so well with everyone too. Jake, that, and like you said, that initial promo was where it was at.
I feel like
a lot of people still talk about it really fondly to this day as well. Is it all right? I feel like Tully did a bit more.
So do I.
So therefore, I feel like Jake goes just beneath him.
Way high.
To the side
Way
of
high.
Him.
After Jake, of course, we have one of his most storied rivals. It's Sting! It's Sting, everybody. A couple of sporadic appearances. This is just where they sort of plucked him out of retirement, so to speak. Just a couple of sporadic appearances for the WWE at Ric Flair's 70th birthday celebration. Before that, there was a Hall of Fame induction, of course, in 2016. After that, utter bollocks at WrestleMania 31.
Yeah.
We knew you won the war, you pricks. We didn't need to know it again in 2015. That was the wrong story to tell. Obviously, it was a bit of a heartbreaking way for Sting's, as it seemed at the time, his in-ring career to end with the injury after the Seth Rollins feud and the buckle bomb or whatever it was. Was it the corner? Like barricade?
It was the buckle bomb, wasn't it?
In the barricade, was it?
I think it was the buckle.
It was a heartbreaking way to end. But then a magical debut happened in December of 2020, and I can't believe it was that long ago.
2020?
Well, December 2020, and the way he's been used has been absolutely perfect. He's obviously given, for want of a better phrase, the Sting rub to Darby Allin, and Darby Allin has very much profited from that, I think, even though I think Darby was doing well anyway, just having Sting with him and Sting being used properly and not like domineering and overshadowing him. I think it's been a perfect partnership.
I agree, and I think it's been the best way to utilize Sting in terms of his stuff that he can do in ring as well. Put him in tag team matches where, and we've had a lot of like tornado tag team matches and stuff like that too, where the focus doesn't need to be on Sting. Like, Sting can go off and do a little bit of something, the cameras can follow whoever else, but then we bring Sting back for like the big moments, the diving off the balconies and this.
That's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for.
He's 65 in March, for goodness sake, but he's been doing that,
To think that he was supposed to be retired and not be doing it again, for him to come back and just be diving off balconies and doing all sorts is pretty mental to think.
Yeah. And every single time he wrestled, as the 3 years have gone on since he joined.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
AEW. He never looked any different.
Like he's, no.
The way he wrestled, he looks like he's in his 40s to me when he's got his face done and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I guess that's the benefit of having face paint.
I guess it is, yeah. Face paint coming to Cultaholic very soon. Anyway, his run in AEW got off to a bit of a shaky start in that match with Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page, because it was clear that the in-ring stuff towards the end was heavily edited. So you're left asking yourself, after that storied career he's had, after that injury against Seth Rollins and Dury, after those few years away from the in-ring stuff, can he still go? He's had 20 matches in AEW, with the 21st and presumably last happening at Revolution in February or March, whenever it's happening in 2024, which is going to be his last ever. We're shooting this obviously on the 24th of October, the day before Dynamite, where Tony gives him a special gift. I think this comes out on Sunday. Let's magically predict what it's going to be. Do you reckon it's going to be a Hall of Fame?
Oh, what, like AEW announcing they're doing a Hall of Fame thing, and then he's the first inductee? Yeah.
Because a lot of people have been saying, is it a match and he gets to pick his last opponent and whatnot? But surely it's going to be Darby, surely.
And that's what I think, because I do genuinely think it's going to be Darby, because that would be like the most perfect way to close out his final chapter, I feel like, in AEW. I think a Hall of Fame thing is a very good shout, too. He is just someone who, when I was a wee boy, and I was like watching old WCW stuff, never got it. Just never got it at all. Sting was never one that I got on board with at all. And now I understand it a bit more. Like the stuff that he's doing now and the stuff that he did do prior and everything. Like I think he is someone who has just excelled in a role that he's been given. And he's like making sure that Darby Allin is getting over, which is great as well. And he's making sure that he gets his bits and pieces into at the same time, which is really good. And I think they've just played to his strengths in AEW personally.
And he even made CM Punk happy when Punk was having the Surface Sting face paint on in that weird six-man tag we had. I said weird, but it was a wonderfully weird six-man tag.
It was.
That entrance at All In when he walked out to Seek and Destroy, I was like Jake Roberts watching Lance Archer match in the crowd. Oh, it was fantastic. But where do you want to put it?
I feel like it's the best.
It's got to be.
It's got to be the best, right?
He's been used perfectly.
He has.
Vicky Guerrero last appeared for the WWE in the first ever Women's Rumble match in 2018. She also had an appearance on SmackDown 1000. I guess that was in 2019 as well. Then she was picked up from obscurity by AEW in 2019. Firstly, which I can't remember, as a guest commentator on Dark.
I don't remember that either.
Me neither. She was then revealed as Nyla Rose. She's in the Nightmare family. Nyla Rose's manager, and a pair in that. If they allowed Nyla Rose to be Twitter Nyla and allowed Vicky Guerrero to be the woman we saw on Dury for years, it was a match made in heaven.
Yes.
But they didn't allow Nyla to be Twitter Nyla, and Vicky was just there.
Yep.
So that came to nothing, and it's a shame. She then had a part in, obviously, Andrade's debut, but that went nowhere as well.
Yep.
Odd.
Didn't she like manage Marina Shafir for a little bit as well?
Yeah, I think that was through association with Nyla, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, I think a lot of stuff that Vicky was sort of given going towards the end of her run was mainly, I believe, like Dark stuff and her turning up on Dark and everything like that. Oh, there was so much promise, as you said there. It would have been so good if they'd let Nyla be Twitter Nyla and Vicky just be like the absolute horrendous heel that we know her for. But unfortunately, that never came to be. I know she said in interviews and stuff as well that she just felt her character never developed within the 3 years. Maybe AEW just didn't give her anything or any sort of prominent time on TV to be able to develop something further with everybody. But at the same time too, I feel like Nyla didn't really need anybody. She was just a dominant force.
She had time
already.
To talk, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So this never really did anything for me, did this one.
Is it a bin?
might be a bin.
All that promise, and it came to now.
It might be a bin.
That wasn't even a highlight. Awesome Kong had a debut. That was the highlight there. Tully had his stuff with FTR. Jake had his early stuff while the promo and the stuff with Lance Archer. Initially, I think it's, it might be a bin there, Andrew.
Because it didn't do anything for anybody, did it?
It didn't get started, did
it? No, it didn't. It's a bin. We're going ink green bin.
It's harsh, but it's fair. Saraya obviously announced her retirement from the wrestling on the Raw after WrestleMania 34 due to the neck injury she suffered while wrestling at a house show in December 2017. She was then eventually released from the WWE. In July 2022. After making the announcement on Twitter the month before, she also said, "The WWE doesn't want to re-sign me. It's not my decision. I don't want anyone to think it was my decision to walk away." So AEW literally plucked her from the retirement... I don't want to keep saying retirement home. They plucked her from the concept of retirement from in-ring stuff. So then, on September the 21st, 2022, she made a debut at Grand Slam in New York at that Arthur Ashe place where they do the tennis, where she had a confrontation with Britt Baker. The crowd went wild. It was fantastic. She got physical for the first time in a while as well, and then went on to have the match against Britt Baker at Full Gear, which I think it was... Considering it's Saraya in there, I think it was as good as it could have been.
Yeah, in terms of like sort of Britt and Saraya keeping them like her safe in that sort of scenarios. Obviously, there's a bit of a feeling out process as well since Saraya hasn't done it for a number of years too. I think considering the circumstance, they did well with it. Yeah. They did all right with it, you know?
Then the Outcasts happened, of course, which never landed for me as a trio. Nope. They never really felt connected. Obviously, they did the stuff with the spray paint, which was all right initially, I thought. But then when you keep doing the same thing, like literally exactly the same over and over again, it got a bit tiresome. Mm. To be fair to Saraya, she did have a banger match, I thought, in terms of, you know, what her body was allowing her to do against Toni Storm after she won the title, I think that was.
Yes.
When they do moves off the second rope and stuff. And also,
yeah, that was really good. Genuinely really good. And then it didn't really amount to anything.
When she got the big moment All In at Wembley, where I think Tony Khan just thought, oh, she's English, she's at Wembley, let's give it a big, you know, hometown hero moment, which for me, I don't think was really appropriate for Saraya.
No.
It was nice to see, I guess, when you think about a story, but looking at a family there in the ring, I was like, I'm not really...
I wasn't feeling proud British at that point, you know what I mean?
Not as if it's Will Ospreay, the national hero. Yeah. I don't even mean that either. Anyway, our fears, I guess, after she won the title were recognised because her body just didn't allow her to defend the title like I guess AEW would have wanted her to do, although Tony Khan's usage of the lady wrestlers was just has been brought into question more than once, I guess, so maybe he was fine with that. But yeah, she had one defense, I think, then she dropped the title to Hikaru Shida. I don't know where to go with this. It's the most tricky one so far, I'd say.
It is a tricky one. Coming back from injury, sort of a similar situation to Shibata there as well. It's just never hit for me though. I'm so excited and so happy for when we see wrestlers come back from when someone's been told you can never wrestle again, you can never do this thing that you love so much. To see someone come back from that is always a phenomenal feeling, no matter what. But sort of from that moment to where we are now, it's not really done anything for me. My favorite things have been the crowd interactions that the Outcast had with the fans and everything around the ring.
Not the Twitter ones.
Not the ones. Well, like when they're actually in the arenas and the fans are shouting at them and they're giving it back and everything like that. I enjoyed that quite a bit. It never felt right. I don't think, even though, yes, get the hometown pop at All In, it's just, again, no, it didn't. All In, all out, all in.
Shake it all about. All in when she won the title.
Yeah.
One at Wembley in front of some people.
The one at Wembley. It wasn't a moment that really struck any sort of chord with me.
Nah.
Oh, is it just about bearable?
I think just about bearable is fine.
Yeah.
I guess the wrestling might have exceeded expectations, that match against Toni Storm, especially. Maybe the debut or the re-debut against Britt Baker as well, but in terms of everything else, it's been a bit like, ugh.
Yeah. We're still yet to find our footing with Saraya.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Christian Cage got to mention the debut where I think Tony Khan maybe bigged it up a bit too much, which allowed people to say certain things. I know there'll be people in the comments saying, well, what Tony Khan said was accurate for Christian Cage, but there was, I forget what the one thing he said was that allowed people to go, oh my God, it's someone like you know.
Oh, we were going like Brock Lesnar.
John Cena or something. Like, but, yeah. There was one thing he said, I forget what it was, but that's what we're talking about there. Anyway, his end of Dury run was an unsanctioned match against Randy Orton on Raw. That wasn't even really a match because it ended after a minute and Christian got no offense in. Then we had that appearance at the 2021 Royal Rumble match where he lasted 18 minutes from the number 24 slot. Then he left the WWE and rocked up an AEW around 2 months later. And I would assume that was just because he was promised more wrestling.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more money as well.
Yeah, you'd think so.
Yeah, so maybe he wasn't going to get used. Much like Edge, I guess, which we'll get on to a bit later. Mm-hmm. No, he's not. Not on there. Maybe it's a bit like Edge. Maybe Edge should have been on there.
Maybe Edge should have been on there.
Why have I not put him on there? I don't know. Well, it's a bit early to say. That's why we'll not put Edge on there.
That's a good point.
I meant to do that anyway. Yep. Maybe AEW promised to use him as a wrestler a bit more, and that's what Christian wanted to do. So that's why he went over to the other side.
I got through to the other side.
Yeah. Oh, you've gone the doors now. It's going Alter Bridge. You old boy.
I am an old boy.
I've never seen him talk about the transition over to AEW, so I don't know what the reason was at the end of the day. He debuted at Double or Nothing at the end of May 21 when he was last out the Casino Battle Royal, last eliminated by Jungle Boy. Mm-hmm. Then they were partners, father and son.
Father and son, some would say.
Basically, yeah. Then, of course, Christian turned on Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. Well, Jungle Boy especially, but Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus after the pair of them lost their AEW World Tag Team titles, yes. That's what I'm trying to say, yes. Christian also had lovely babyface matches along his babyface run. He defeated Kenny Omega on the first episode of Rampage to win the Impact World title, where there were spots on the middle rope that I never ever thought I'd expect to see.
That match was phenomenal.
Yeah, I remember being laughed at by the other Cultaholic Wrestling podcast lads for saying Christian would win, even though they had the two matches back to back, didn't they? For the Impact World title, the AEW World title, of course he was going to win the first one. It was obvious. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I've mentioned the heel turn there. And then we get the birth of Christian's maybe best run ever in professional wrestling. I've still got a poncho on for like 04, 05 Christian when he was on Raw, being a scoundrel with Tyson Tomko and people like that. But your dad is dead. It's a simple offense. It's a simple line, but he's delivered it so well time and time again. I go back to that one where Nick Cage, he's like, oh, tell me something about your little friend, Darby Allin and Sting. Oh, it's Nick Cage. Message from the future. This is Ross here. I know I've said Nick Cage a few times there. I didn't mean it. I meant Nick Wayne, but Andrew didn't stop me because he's an evil man.
I am an evil man. I was like, he's on a roll here. I don't want to cut him off. You know what I mean?
Back to the tier list, everybody. I'm very sorry. I know it's Nick Wayne. It's not Nick Gage. They're two very different people. I hear you have a father, and your father, and Taz goes, oh no.
Uh-oh.
Your father is dead, and it's just spawned this wonderful evil man in a turtleneck. Obviously, everyone makes the comparisons to a James Bond villain, but it's, as Cody Rhodes would say, apropos.
It's such a weird thing to think, like, you know, we get like maybe even a little tease of Christian against somebody, and the first thing I feel like we all do is Google to see if that person person's father is no longer here. Like what he is doing now is some of my favorite work. Just, I think, out of any wrestler, honestly, like I'm enjoying it so much, and I'm enjoying watching this all play out. He's someone who I feel like is continuously reinvented himself like multiple times over his entire career, and he still shows no sign of stopping like at all at the moment. He's in ring work. He's either 50 or he must be over 50 at this point. That his in-ring stuff that he can do now still at this age is tremendous as well. That match he had with Kenny Omega,
he's 49, he's young,
really. So he's pushing 50, man. The match that he had with Kenny Omega was incredible too.
Yeah,
I can't remember if Meltzer gave it like 5 stars or it was close to 5 stars at least, but it was worthy of that anyway. Like,
yeah,
it was so good. I think it's the absolute best.
Not even just the promos, it's the other matches he's had with the likes of Darby Allin, with the one very recently where he nearly murdered the man on the steps on the outside.
Oh my God.
Brian Danielson on Collision, there was one recently as well. The ridiculousness of the finish to the final burial match with Jungle Boy is a moment we'll all, just the way the coffin went,
straight down.
Gone. Even his own daughter isn't safe in his promo.
Oh.
Did you win that title?
So
security, get her out of here. It's so simple, but it's so effective in the way he delivers it.
Yeah.
I forget who I saw something on Twitter recently where someone was like, he's the best. He could be the best actor if he went into that world just because of the way he commands words. I forget who said it.
That's
but I was
a
like,
great
yeah.
point.
Just the fact, was it that segment where they had Nick Wayne? Nick Wayne.
Nick Wayne, yeah.
I said Nick Gage earlier.
I was, but I was like, I don't want to.
Wayne's mom. Yes. Sorry, everybody. When they had her in last week, just the way he was like, you should have called me. Just the way he delivered that.
So good.
Well, if Edge walks in there, Adam Copeland walks in, well, you should have picked up the telephone and you should have picked up your index finger and given it the sternest waggle on your way to pursuing my phone number.
It feels real. It feels more real, doesn't it, when Christian does it almost? Even though obviously he's playing like such a bloated character in terms of his heelishness and evilness, but like it's still... It's direct, but then in little inflections and stuff he does, it's so subtle at the same time as well. Which is like, it's the perfect balance, I feel like.
I can't believe I've just been saying Nick Gage.
Well, I mean...
Your little friend Nick Gage.
Does Nick Gage? What's that?
I don't want to look that up.
We'll see.
Samoa Joe, we move on to now. He noted on Renee Paquette's The Sessions that he was thinking about retiring after his second release from the WWE at the start of 2022. He said, I was legitimately thinking about hanging it up for health reasons. You know, obviously still coming off the concussion and still dealing with the very hidden effects of that and getting back to ring healthy and transitioning back to a physical state where it's like, I could do something for a good period of time and not want to pass out. So he was thinking about retiring, which is why he's in this tier list. Joe returned to Ring of Honor initially, now owned by AEW, of course, by the time that happened, on April the 1st, 2022, at Supercard of Honor 15, coming out to aid Jonathan Gresham and Lee Moriarty after they were attacked by Jay Lethal and Sonjay Dutt. Then he was sort of used more and more on AEW, got to the final of the Owen in 2022. Yeah, before losing to Adam Cole. I was having to think about that for a second. Then, of course, he became the King of Television by holding the Ring of Honor TV title and a couple of TNT titles on the way. Meat slapping affairs with so many people, but the pinnacle of his run so far in AEW might just be that match against CM Punk that opened all in.
That, I like the one that he had recently with MJF as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was a good
one. I like the one he had against Big Willie Mac.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Meat slapping in more ways than one. He's just been fantastic, hasn't he?
Again, someone who came in, and I love Samoa Joe, like, he's one of my favorite wrestlers. When he first came in, things were a little bit slow for him, I felt like.
I'll tell you what, though, you go back and watch his closing stage at NXT, you could tell he just wasn't right.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're fearing, like, oh my God, we might have lost a great here in terms of what he could do with
and that was And that was it. And then I think maybe the fear of coming into AEW, somewhere sort of where I think there's a lot more work rate in terms of what the wrestlers do, and having a little bit of sort of fear that, oh, maybe he might not, and it sounds so stupid to say this because it's Samoa Joe, but maybe he just can't keep up with that pace almost. But he's done it in such a way where maybe he was a bit slow to start with when he came in, but he's like picked it up and he's having longer matches and he's absolutely putting on some of the most incredible matches, like week to week sometimes too.
And it's the promos as well. We saw that. It's the way, the more recent ones where he's sort of sitting in his room with his cigar and he's just like, MJF, I'm calling you out this, that, and you. He looks the dog's bollocks.
He does. He's like a final, but he feels like a final boss almost, which is really, really cool.
I don't know if it's top tier, Andrew.
I don't think it's the best. I think it's lovely.
Solidly. Yes, it is.
solidly. And I think it is, it's lovely and it's a bit, it's in between Shibata and Kingston for me.
Why are you?
It's there, baby.
Right, we end with someone called CM Punk. We did a tier list about all of his matches up until his suspension after Brawl Out, which is on the channel right now. So if you want to go and look at our in-depth thoughts about all those matches, please go and check that tier list out. I wish what happened at All Out didn't happen at All Out, but it did happen at All Out.
It did happen.
Because the wrestling before All Out was absolutely sensational. The program with MJF might just be, aside from Hangman Page's ascension to the title, the best of AEW's ever done, but it did. So do we put more stock in the wrestling of CM Punk in AEW or more stock in the fact that he kept falling out with people in AEW?
The wrestling?
Yeah, because that affects where we put him in this tier list.
I feel like the wrestling, like, it felt like, to begin with, it felt like he hadn't really missed a step.
No.
I was like, bloody hell, he's still really good.
It's ever since he won that bloody title.
Yeah.
And he did that entrance, the following Dynamite, I think it was, when he did the stage dive and broke his ankle.
Yeah, and then it just went down.
It never got right again after that, did it?
Which
is a shame. To be fair, Collision in the initial run where he was, you know, allegedly, you know,
the Collision boy,
a big part of the creative and all that sort of stuff, and who gets to walk in the building and who has a locker room on the other side of the building, all that sort of stuff. It was working. Collision was better than Dynamite when Collision was first going. I think in terms of a TV product, excuse me once again, Collision has fallen off a long way, whereas the TV ratings for Collision have not, which sort of contradicts the show falling off in terms of quality. Does it even matter? I don't know. But
It's a really difficult one for this tier. That's why I left it till last, because do you put more stock in the wrestling or the earache he's given Tony Khan? Well, the Bucks are obviously cultable as well, and Kenny Omega, Ace Steel. That went over that situation.
Yeah. Of course,
But you look at that situation and the situation at All Out, where, I don't know, maybe Jungle Boy was in the wrong there, wasn't he?
I guess he was at that point. Jungle Boy was in the wrong. Maybe CM Punk was in the wrong for acting allegedly how he acted as well. Yeah. So it's one of those. But in the ring, I think he was absolutely incredible. I loved seeing him have his matches and like really keep up with the younger people. He was in there with Darby Allin, one of the fastest men alive.
You sound like a promoter from the 40s.
I know, but he managed to keep his own and my God, those matches were so good. I felt like maybe when the whole stuff with Hangman Adam Page was happening, maybe that rocked his confidence a little bit. Obviously, we saw him try to do the buckshot lariat, and he managed to do it one time, and then a few more times.
That whole situation is just so maddening, though, because we, as a fan, I don't think we would have known there was an issue if Punk didn't make it an issue on air.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it?
Well, sorry, because when Hangman started it, and then Punk took offence to it, and then called Hangman out when he wasn't even there.
Well, that's it, because Punk, like, blends the line between reality and sort of work stuff anyway, right? Yeah. So we had no idea what was going on at that point.
No. I tell you what, let's do it on the rest. If it was the wrestling, it would be in the best.
It would be the best.
But it's way down at the end.
Yes.
So we've got, is it bottom or lovely?
Oh.
Somewhere in, it's got to get weighed down because the way it all ended in tears. Okay.
Well then.
Do you reckon?
Yeah. I think CM Punk would love it if we put him below Eddie Kingston.
Go on then.
I think he'd absolutely buzz off it.
That was the world title. Well, again, outside of MJF.
Yeah.
That would have been a hell of a world title for you, like a Dick CM Punk.
I would have loved to have seen them run it back again.
Yeah.
Like, you're right, with a Dick CM Punk, it would have been so perfect, and just obviously the roles reversed in that moment as well. It is sad how it ended, because after that match with Joe, I was like, I can't wait to see. I was one of them people, right? And I'll hold my hands up. When all this stuff kicked off with the drama, I was like, can't be arsed with this. Just get rid of him. I'm not really fussed at this point.
The right call, wasn't it?
I feel like it was the right call. But like when he came back and we saw him kind of blurring the lines a bit between being maybe a heel or a babyface, it was like, ooh, where's he going to go with this? And then after that match with Joe, where they put on a banger, I thought it was such a cool way to open that show. And then, yeah, everything sort of happened and now we're here. And now I'm sort of wishing what could have been or what might have been going forward from this.
Yeah, he should have been there during his initial run. But anyway, there's the tier list. Are we going to move Eddie up? It's up to you.
No, I don't think so. I think we'll keep him where he is.
So are you going to keep it in that order in the best tier? Because we know from the realms of retirement, who has been plucked up by AEW, I've just spat everywhere, very sorry, and had the best run. Is it Sting or Christian Cage?
Oh no, that one's difficult.
Say a name, Andrew. Not Joe Hendry's though, he might appear.
Maybe from pure in-ring wrestling. Maybe Christian.
He's going to go Christian.
I'm going to go Christian.
Lock it in. Tell us how wrong we are in the comments down below. I've been Gary YouTube, joined by another Gary YouTube. There is our tier list in terms of those from the retirement realms who were picked up from AEW. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you very soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.